At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Welcome to The On-Call Room,
a Grey's Anatomy podcast.
I'm one of your hosts, Abby.
And I'm the other host, Bree.
And it's a beautiful day to podcast. Hi, listeners. We hope you are doing well. We wanted to, before we even get into our normal announcements, to just kind of speak a little bit on what's been going on in the world right now. It's a really hard and difficult place, and we just wanted to make sure that our listeners all know where we stand on these matters. And we released a statement. Well, today, just so you guys know, is Tuesday, June 2nd. Usually you are going to hear this episode a little later than when we're actually recording. But today we released a statement on Instagram and our Facebook page, and we'll be sending a message out to our patrons as well. But we wanted to say it here. And our statement is that Bree and I strongly believe that Black Lives Matter, and we want you to know that. Our goal has always been to create an open dialogue about Grey's Anatomy, the stories of characters in the show, and the creators who made it. As two white women creating this podcast, we understand that we may never understand what our Black brothers and sisters go through, but we want you to know that we are listening, we hear you, and we see you. Systematic racism uses silence as a tool to further harm the Black men, women, children, and trans people who are already being harmed and killed every day in this country for the color of their skin with little to no justice. We want you to know that we are in this fight to see justice is served. After years of deep diving the episodes of Grey's Anatomy, we have a responsibility to put the lessons we have learned from it to good use. Grey's Anatomy has always been a show that didn't shy away from hard stories or uncomfortable realities, and now is not the time for us to stand silent. As April says to a police officer in the episode Personal Jesus, which is in season 14, episode 10, she says, "You can't just shoot people because you're afraid. How am I supposed to have faith in a system like that?" We just wanted to make sure that you who maybe don't follow us on social media platforms just know that we believe Black Lives Matter, and we are just trying to do our part to let all of our listeners know that this is where we stand, and that's just the beginning. Bree, did you want to talk a little bit on what it's like to be an ally?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say that I know that I am feeling really lost right now and what I should do or shouldn't do. And, you know, Abby and I were talking that part of me wants to retreat into a hole, but I also know that that feeling is deeply rooted in privilege. And that's a really uncomfortable feeling to face, but I think it's important. And I also think it's important acknowledging that. So what can we do? How can we be allies? And I know there are so many people with boots on the ground doing really hard work. And it's my responsibility to elevate these people and participate when I can, donate my money to them. And I also think it's my responsibility to question my reactions and thoughts to things. When I should stay silent, I should stay silent. When I should use my voice, I should. And listen to what others have to say and do the personal work to educate myself. I think that's a really important one, you know, asking people like, well, what should I do? There are so many resources out there that you can work really hard to educate yourself on ways that you can help. I thought Abby sent me this article. She may have not, but I'm going to post it in the show notes. I just wanted to read, I wanted to read the blurb that is on this website. It says, From Ohio to Colorado to Minnesota to New York, protesters are calling for criminal punishments for involved cops and voicing their outrage at decades of state-sanctioned violence against Black people. Demonstrators have been met with tear gas and rubber bullets, and hundreds have been arrested around the country. Community groups are teaming up to care for those injured or jailed as a result of the protests and supporting families of the victims. And here's where you can donate or find ways to help out in every city. So this website, which I'm going to share once again in the show notes, has cities all across the United States that have different organizations that you can donate to, or you can try and get involved with their organization. Obviously, this list isn't all of the organizations. So we also wanted to say that if you as a listener have a deep connection to an organization and you want to shed awareness to that, please email us at beyondcallroom@gmail.com. And we will use our platform to connect our other listeners to those organizations. What we're going to do is, if there is a link that you send us, and maybe you want to share some information with that, we're going to continue to add it to this episode's show notes. We want everything to be in one spot that you can click on, and a bunch of different links that you can go to. So we don't want to just have it in a bunch of different spots. So once again, the best way to get us that information is to email us, and then we will add it to the show notes of this particular episode.
Yeah, that way it's kind of like our own little built-in community resource guide, which I'm hoping, I just hope you guys can send us that, because we would love to hear from those who are involved firsthand with certain organizations that we might not know about. I really wanted to point out too, I thought it was really great. Obviously, I feel like Grey's Anatomy has pushed uncomfortable storylines like their whole time. It's honestly why I think we love this show, because it feels relevant all the time. Mm-hmm. And they have never been afraid of that. And I just also really liked the statement that Shonda Rhimes made in regards to like Shondaland, the blanket, you know, company that all these television shows fall under. She says, Shondaland has long been a place for storytelling, and quite frankly, in our society, the story of racism is long and painful. The injustices that Black people have endured must not be ignored. Growth comes from acknowledging history, learning from it, and changing the future. Racism should be condemned, and everyone standing against it should be championed. Collective voices create change. Do your part today and every day. And I just really loved that. So we will continue to do our part in what we can, and we're just thank you also. We are not perfect. We are trying and we are learning every second, and we appreciate you learning and trying with us, essentially. And please know that you can always email us feedback about anything at theoncallroompod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, but we just wanted to make sure we informed you of that.
Yeah, I just want to quickly add to what you said, Abby, and thanks for sharing what Shonda Rhimes said, because I think that was beautiful and really poignant to our podcast, because we're Grey's Anatomy podcast. So right. I really appreciate that. Yeah, I just wanted to say we are not perfect, like Abby said. And so I really do, you know, encourage you, if there is something that is said, it is uncomfortable for us to hear that we hurt you, or we might have said something that was, I don't know, that we didn't express the way that we meant it, but that is important for us to hear. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't think we want to come back at people defending ourselves. We just want to learn from others. Once again, it's not just your responsibility to educate us. Like we said, we're trying to do our part on that as well. Is your dog barking?
He is. I'm sorry, everyone.
It's totally fine.
He has strong feelings about this as well.
Yeah. So we're trying to do our part, but obviously we have a lot of work to still do, and we are open and willing to grow. And so...
Exactly. And so thanks to those of you who have sent us messages before. I'm hoping you can't hear the dog. Good Lord. Just when we're saying we're imperfect, this is what's happening. But yeah, we'll get back to our announcements in 1 second. We're going to take a little break, and then we will get back to our regular content of season 9, episode 21-22. So thank you for being with us, and hang tight for 1 second. All right, everyone. Again, if this is your first time listening, hello. We are a Grey's Anatomy podcast, deep diving all episodes. We're currently in season 9, episode 21 and 22, Sleeping Monster, and Do You Believe in Magic? As always, you can support us and get more content by going to www.patreon.com, where you can pledge to be an intern, a resident, or an attendee. Yeah, don't just go to patreon.com. You'll find many creators there. You know what? Pledge a different creator. You can go to patreon.com/theoncallroom where you can pledge those levels. You can get bonus episodes. You can get access to our post-op, which is the bonus 10 minutes that we give our $10 patrons on every episode. You can join our Facebook group. You can get our show notes. It's all sorts of fun stuff.
Yeah. You can also follow us on Instagram at Beyond Call Room Pod. We post about new episodes and you can share thoughts with us there if you'd like. And it's just another way for you to connect with us.
Yeah. We also have a website, www.theoncallroompod.com, where there's a contact form. You can reach us there. It's a really great way. Or if you want to refer the podcast to a friend, it's a great source. And we also want to let you know that this week's post-op, so just again, we're going to explain it maybe just a few more times before we don't do it anymore. But if you are a $10 patron, when you hear us call time of death, don't press stop. There's going to be a bonus little section of the podcast following that if you are listening via the Patreon app. And if you are not a $10 patron, then don't worry about it. You won't. Your podcast will end after we call time of death. This week's little topic is going to be magic.
Ooh.
And sawing people in half.
Yeah, we're talking about Stevie Nicks. Because she's a witch.
Gosh.
We're not.
stay tight if you want to learn a little bit more about the different ways to saw someone in half, except not saw them in half.
Yeah, not in real life. The last way we always ask you to support us is to rate and review us anywhere that you listen to the podcast. 5 scalpels, 5 stars, please. We have a featured review. Do you want to read it, Abby?
Sure, I'll read fast. I feel like we've been having a lot of announcements today, but this one is from Emily Smith. It says, this podcast is truly one of a kind. I have to admit, I am not the biggest fan of podcasts, but I'm a big fan of The On-Call Room.
I love podcasts. I love that.
I know. Yeah. I started rewatching Grey's at the beginning of quarantine and started getting into podcasts as well. Then I found a Grey's podcast. I rewatched the show a little too fast to completely start the podcast from the beginning, but I've been listening to different episodes almost every day. I find myself rewatching the upcoming episodes before the podcast episode comes out, so I know exactly what you're going to be talking about. I love hearing Bree and Abby catch us up on their week. It is nice to especially hear what others are doing during this crazy time. You both do such a great job diving into the episodes. I really enjoy getting to hear a different perspective on the show, especially since most of the people I know don't watch Grey's. Thank you both for continuing to make the podcast. My favorite day of the week is when your podcast comes out. 11 out of 10. Recommend this podcast. You won't regret listening.
Oh, thank you.
I want to add, take a shot every time we read the word podcast. but thank you so much, Emily Smith. We really appreciate that. And it makes me happy that people are listening during quarantine,
yeah,
which is almost, who knows what it is anymore. So
yeah, we're happy you found us.
Yeah, we've had a lot of announcements and statements today, and I think we all just really want to talk about Grey's. So
yeah,
we're just going to jump right into these episodes. Do you, which one? You read the longer one.
Okay.
But I just read. How about you read this? I don't know. Read them all.
Well, all right. We're in season 9, episode 21 and 22, Sleeping Monster and Do You Believe in Magic? Why don't you read the first one? Because I want to read the one about magic.
Perfect.
Okay.
Okay, this one was read by Miranda Bailey. Infections are like sleeping monsters. You can't see them. You can't feel them, but you must do everything in your power to contain them. Because when the monsters wake up, they are out of control. All that time you spent convincing yourself the sleeping monster wasn't real, it was gathering strength. The infection was spreading. The monster's awake now, and there's nothing you can do about it. Miranda Bailey.
All right, and Meredith Grey. There's no such thing as magic. False is what I would say to that, as far as we know. And while as surgeons, we study the secrets behind the human's body's intricate network of cells, tissues, and organs, when things go wrong, horribly, horribly wrong, there are only so many tricks we, I think it's supposed to be, we have up our sleeves to put a body back together. But there is a kind of power, more of a spell, really. And when we get it right, it can be pretty damn magical. As surgeons, we are no stranger to the breaks and tears in the human body. In fact, we sacrifice the better part of our 20s learning every possible way to make it whole again. But there are some wounds a surgeon can't repair, not on our own. It takes a kind of power we just don't have. There's no such thing as magic, not in the traditional abracadabra, genie in a bottle kind of way. But there is magic in knowing that while not everything can be repaired, most everything can be survived.
Perfect. I wanted to add a little thing to the way we open podcasts, just because we use this resource page when we find all the patients for our shock and workup. But I want to just read a quick short summary of the two episodes that we're going to be talking about today, and then we'll get into shock and workup. So short summary of them both. First one, Bailey finds herself at the center of a CDC investigation surrounding the death of several of her patients as Jackson and the rest of the board members argue over how to address the crisis with the public. Meanwhile, Christina teases Alex about his unspoken feelings for Joe, and Owen continues to take special care of Ethan as the condition of his parents remain uncertain. Do you want to read the next one?
Sure. The doctors reach out to Bailey, but she continues to shut everyone out. After an incident with Ethan's grandmother, Owen fears the child could end up in foster care, and a new craniofacial specialist arrives at Grace Sloan Memorial Hospital to work on a young patient. Meanwhile, a magician's assistant is rushed into the ER after a magic trick goes terribly wrong.
Perfect. I'm going to read Shotgun Workup because I just want to try it.
All right, go for
it. We have 19 patients today, everyone. We have Seth Lepick, post-op. Do I say MRSA?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, MRSA, USA 600 infection, or is it MRSA 600?
It's hard to, I'm
not a
doctor.
I'm going to say MRSA. I'm not a doctor. I'm just going to say MRSA. Seth Lepick, post-op MRSA infection. Rachel Dawson, seizure, brain hemorrhage. Paul Dawson, he had no change in the first episode. Dee Dee Keller, finger amputation. Jane Keller, finger amputation. Cash Keller, finger amputation, Francis Keller, broken hand, Amelie Ward, pregnancy, baby Ward, hypoplastic left heart syndrome, intact atrial septum, Joyce Bash, post-op MRSA infection, AJ Keller, nosebleed, Miranda Bailey, carrier for MRSA, Kayla Warren, severe abdominal wound, pelvic fracture, Paul Dawson, coma, Kim Wells, abdominal rupture, Iris Kane, Moya disease, transient ischemic attacks, Tyler Sims, encephalocele facial cleft. Heather Brooks, facial laceration. Ethan Dawson, Zolpidem overdose.
Damn, girl. You did such a good job.
Thank you.
Rounds, it's a little bit less. We have the CDC investigation of Bailey and MRSA and how it affects her and her relationship with, well, you wrote Chief, but it's actually Dr. Weber.
Oh, Richard. God. Richard Weber.
April and Matthew get back together. On the flip side, Jackson and Stephanie are having some problems. Alex admits his love of Joe, and he feels like he's kind of ruined his chance. Alex spills detail about Joe's life to Jason, and then they fight. And then we're going to talk about the end scene of the second episode. Dr. Boswell comes into the hospital, and she's flirting with Arizona. Then we have Owen and Ethan and their storyline, what's happening there. We'll probably maybe touch on his parents as well, I think, in that.
Yes.
And then Derek and Meredith discuss the new baby arriving, or what they like to call us, the fetus. Who will be in the room when Mare is giving birth and their fears around what he will be like.
I want to end with that one because it's such a cute scene. And I want us to go out today with that thought.
Yeah, love it.
Derek in a princess hat.
Yes. First notes?
Yeah, first notes. You go first.
Well, my first note was, oh, Bailey is doing the monologue because she's not always doing it. And then my second note was, yikes, CDC.
Yeah, I had the same thing. And I just said, it's so sad for Bailey because her intention was never to hurt her patients. Like,
oh,
this,
absolutely.
I feel like, kills her. Should we just talk about that whole storyline? Just jump right into it?
Yeah, you can start.
Okay, cool. So it kind of starts with the board meeting getting all together too. And Jackson says that they need to put out a statement. Like they need to be ahead of it before someone else hears about it and writes about it. This actually got me wondering. And I tried to do, this is what I could have done for post-op today, but got me wondering into, they don't have these board meetings anymore, obviously, because half of these cast members aren't on the show. But I wish that there was still like more meetings with the board because I love how they all have different opinions about this. Like half of them were like, we have to protect Bailey. And then I actually think like Jackson is thinking critically, like get ahead of this before someone else does. It was just really interesting. But the CDC is there to investigate Bailey and the patients who have died, and she is left out of the conversation since she is the one in question.
Yeah, I think it's interesting going back to what you were saying about Jackson and the rest of the board, how they kind of frame this and film this, I think makes you kind of, as a viewer, disagree or feel like, you know, Jackson's not really on their side or on Bailey's side. But I think you make a good point that, like, I do think he's kind of trying to think critically about it. Clearly you have like an allegiance to one of your doctors and you should support them. I don't know. I don't know what the right answer is.
I don't either. I think it's a really hard situation. And it was just really, this was a very, very Bailey-centric episode mm-hmm. compared to the second one, how she's like separated herself from everyone. Like she's in it, but she's not interacting. And the head guy of the CDC does the thing and we are constantly visiting the scene back and forth where she's being questioned step by step what she did when she was operating on those patients. And they also swabbed like her, Murphy, like all of the doctors mm-hmm. and were testing for the staff strain. And I thought it was really cool that when he asked her if she scrubbed in or not, and she kind of looks, at first you're like, oh shit, did she scrub in? Because she looked shocked. And then she answers 4 minutes and 36 seconds exactly. She sings, is it Freedom, the song by Aretha Franklin?
She sings Think by Aretha Franklin.
Oh yeah, that's what it is. And she's like, the song is 2 minutes and 18 seconds.
I know that.
I sing it twice. Yeah, it makes you realize what a good doctor she is. That like, I have no doubt she sings every single word of that in her head. And like, she knew to the seconds how long she scrubbed in for.
It kind of reminds me of like what has, you know, what's currently going on with the pandemic, how need to be washing your hands for a certain amount of time. And they like, I think, what is it? Happy Birthday or,
twice.
There are certain songs that you can sing in your head or when you're teaching children how to wash their hands after they go to the bathroom, mm-hmm. sing this song and this, and then you know that you're done washing your hands. And she uses Aretha Franklin to scrub in. I love that.
Yep, I love it too. Makes me like want to know what all the other surgeons, what songs they use in their head, because I'm sure they all have one. And I'd love to know if there's any of you that are listening that do scrub in for your job. Do you sing a song? I would love to know. So also I just wanted to note that during this time too, Meredith and Richard Weber took over Bailey's patients mm-hmm. with Meredith taking a few more than Richard. And there was this moment where Derek was like concerned about her because of the staph infection. And Bailey or Meredith was just kind of like, whatever, they're Bailey's patients. Like I'm doing it. And I feel like it's just another, I don't actually know if like Derek's fear is founded or not, like if she shouldn't be because she's pregnant, but Meredith is one to never, she never puts herself first, you know, like she always puts patients first. And it was just like, I just like that consistency in her character, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. There was one scene in regards to like, she's being kind of hounded in these interviews with the CDC and like making her go over things over and over and over again. And I loved when she kind of broke and was like, did you put your cap on your toothpaste this morning? Mm-hmm. And the CDC guy kind of looks at her like, what are you talking about? She's like, I'm sure you brushed your teeth this morning. Do you remember putting the cap back on the toothpaste? Because that's kind of the similar thing that she's having to deal with doing these surgeries, you know?
Right.
Like, I think a lot of it just comes really naturally. And so having to remember every single detail is hard.
Yeah, it was kind of hardcore, though, when he came back at that with, like, are you equating brushing my teeth to these are people's lives? And she's like, no, that's not what I meant.
Yeah.
Which I feel like that retort she made was accurate, but also, like, came back at her in a terrible way.
Yeah.
What's weird, though, is I felt like that guy interviewing, He was asking repetitively, but I felt like he had like a warmth about him. Like he wasn't like yelling at her in that moment. He was, I feel like Bailey has a hard time taking criticism. Like mm-hmm. I like to put myself in Bailey's shoes and I believe she's an Enneagram one. And like anytime someone tells you that your intentions or, you know, like, you know, your intentions and she knows she did not mean to hurt these people. So she just wants to get straight to the facts. Like, what are my results? Mm-hmm. just tell me, I don't want to go through this. I did everything right.
Right. Yeah, you can tell it's definitely very uncomfortable for her.
Oh, yeah.
Which I think it would be for any doctor, but I think you're especially right with Bailey. And I think we do see similar things with her character throughout Grey's Anatomy.
Yes, absolutely. I don't actually think it's because like she's this like narcissist who thinks everything she do is right. I think it's because she works so hard and has studied so hard and like puts so much into it that like I just think her intentions are so strong that it like shocks her if mm-hmm. something goes wrong, you know? Mm-hmm. I did really thought it was like comical, the storyline of the little girl, Frances, who wants to be a journalist. And she like had heard the doctors talking about Bailey and was like quizzing Callie in Arizona on questions and said that they were going to be her sources.
Yeah.
And just that whole thing. I was a journalism major, but I just thought that was very like, they had to insert a little bit of comedy in this.
Yeah.
And she wanted to outdo that one girl in her school who got featured by the Times.
Yeah. Yeah. And so this was going to be her big break, you know, breaking this.
Yeah. And they were
story.
Like, you can't write about Bailey.
Yeah. Like, we're not even talking about it. We're not even putting a press release out. Like, they wouldn't give
exactly.
her cell phone back, which I thought was, yeah, a funny little side story for sure.
Yeah. And then she's like, you're blocking my Second Amendment. And they're like, you want a gun now? Yeah. I just thought that was like, she's like, I mean, my first. Like, she was so smart, but also still like a young kid. And I just thought that was cute.
Yeah.
Bailey's patients are all dying.
Yeah. Which, should we kind of go down to where Bailey, I think, realizes she has a staph infection?
When she overhears Richard?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was rough.
And, like, storms into the, like, conference room with the CDC guy.
Yeah, and she, like, demands her results, which he kind of just stares at her.
Yeah.
And just like it makes, she knows she has it. What I thought was interesting though before that was when she hears Richard, it's Murphy and Richard talking to the patient's like spouse or whatever. And he says that it's not the hospital that has the infection. It is one doctor and she has been like quarantined, you know, or whatever. When Murphy, like the patient leaves, Murphy's like, wait, really? Is it just, and he's like, no, I lied so that the patient wouldn't transfer, you know, their family member. But Bailey doesn't hear that part. And it's hard because that's the moment where Bailey feels like Richard failed her, which mm-hmm. we'll talk about. And it's complicated because like he did, but also if she'd heard the last part, he was just doing that and saying it that way so that the patient wouldn't like be put in more harm's way. It's frustrating. I hate communication problems.
They are the worst. It's the reason why so many of us go to therapy.
Yeah, seriously. It was really wild to me. I did not remember the thing about it being the gloves.
So, okay, same. So I totally remember this whole storyline with like Bailey has MRSA and then that triggers like OCD tendencies or, you know, however it plays out. But when the guy was like, you know, Dr. Bailey does have this staph infection. She does have MRSA, but it's actually the gloves that they switched over when like the
Pegasus.
Yeah. And those were the reasons why, because they were like manufactured. There was like an issue with manufacturing. So that made me feel a lot better, but clearly that doesn't make Bailey feel better.
Right. Which that is like everyone around her is like, oh, Bailey, best outcome ever. Also, it was terrifying when they put the water in the glove and then they like squeezed it out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just am like, how the hell did that happen? That Pegasus, there are so many hospitals that they in this imaginary world
I'm surprised,
that Pegasus uses.
Well, I'm surprised there weren't like more post-op infections.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. So that she like just, she still sort of shuts down after that. Before the conversation with Richard, though, they're just the finish of the story I line out with Frances. Callie in Arizona give her the full write-up of what happened mm-hmm. because now she can publish this story about Pegasus gloves
yes.
being the ones that caused this problem, which I just thought it was really cute how that ended.
Yeah, that they gave her the press release so she could get ahead of it. And
exactly, yeah. So Richard finds Bailey sitting outside. He sits next to her and she asks about Seth Lepick and he says that Richard says, I lost him, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And Bailey then goes, I didn't get to write down the full speech. Do you have it fully written?
I don't. The only thing I have is you are not who I thought you were.
Okay, yeah. So she says that all he's trying to do is protect the hospital. She brings up Adele and how she always said that he cares too much about the hospital. And she says, you are a drunk. You were operating on your patients drunk and I stood by you. I expected the same from you. I deserved it and I earned it. And she says, all you care about. And then she pauses and she says, you are not who I thought you were. And that is crushing.
What do you think about that?
I don't know, because I feel like she's basing that off of the thing that she heard Richard say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like Richard only said that, like he didn't know Bailey was listening, but also, I don't know. I also don't think that it was really right that Bailey let Richard operate drunk.
No, like, yeah, like ethically, you know, like there's, drunk.
Right. There's a lot of confusing things there. I also think she's very much like in her feelings right there. Mm. I wouldn't say that Richard not letting her reach her patients and being like quarantined or whatever is him being a bad person. Like, I don't know what else they could have done. They had to figure out who was responsible for it.
And they also let Bailey participate in like the briefing afterwards. Like they voted, right. You know, Jackson was like, no, we shouldn't do this. And they voted, right. You know, so I do think they did try to include Bailey in the process as much as they could.
Right.
So, yeah.
It's a little sad. I do think they should have been there a little bit more for her, because I can't imagine the pain and stress of knowing that because you had an infection, your patients died.
Sure.
And their reaction just being like, it's the gloves, all's well. Like
right.
That does not make it better for her.
Right. I wonder if they felt like legally they couldn't do that.
Right.
You know, and I'm not justifying that. I'm not saying that's right, but I definitely think she felt very alone through all of this. And when Richard was going through something really hard and difficult and, you know, she stood by him and no one stood by right. Bailey,
yeah.
It's how so, she's feeling. And I think
yes.
That's fair.
Yep. And then in the next episode, the whole time, and Bailey is inside her genome lab. We get different instances of doctors coming to try to talk to her, Callie. We get...
Arizona,
we get Meredith.
It's Christina, like Callie being like, how did talking to Bailey go? And she was like, amazing. And she's like, did you get her to talk? She's like, oh, no. Like Christina is just dealing with her own thing, clearly.
Yeah, she's just in her own storyline there.
Yeah.
And then there's that little...
I'm sorry. I also love when Callie's like, fine, you want to give us a silent treatment, like, we'll give it right back to you in, like, a second passes. And she's like, Bailey, come on. Like, please talk to us. Like, Callie clearly can't give the silent treatment back.
Not at all. And then there's that, like, little scene where Callie's like, Richard, please. Like, you're the only one that can talk to her. And he just shuts it down and says, I am not the one to talk to Bailey right now. I hurt her and I'm not sure I can repair it.
Yeah.
So pretty soon.
He contacts Ben, which I think is great.
I think so too. It's really sad. So we see that before Ben gets there, though, there's like that zoom in on what she's doing. And there's all these Petri dishes lined up and they all have her name on it. And it says, I looked this up because I couldn't read it right away, but it's like the MRSA, it's like the staph infection and it's her test results and they all say negative.
Yep.
Like she does not have it anymore.
Right.
But continuing to test it.
Which they had said at the beginning of the episode, like she can take patients now. She's been treated for it. She's been cleared. She no longer has the infection. But then we finally see, and so this whole episode, you think she's working on her genome project, but you just, then we finally, it's like almost eerie. Like we watch her swab her hand and then it like, it's the zoom out of all of these different Petri dishes. It's like, okay, she's clearly like, she's in a place right now.
Yep. Yep. So then Ben arrives and he goes in there and we learn through Bailey being like his intern exams are coming up. That's mm-hmm. where he is in the program. And he says to her, being here for you is my main job. There's no need to keep doing things by yourself anymore. And we finally then get her admission to him that she keeps testing herself and she feels dirty. And she's like holding her hands in front of him. And then she says, they died because of me. And they like kind of embrace. It's really sad.
I think I had
a little bit of GGBs there just because, A, I love that when Ben says like, there's no need to keep doing this by yourself anymore. But B, it's just like, I can't imagine that feeling, like not being able to like wash your hands enough, you know, like it's like you just can't get that feeling out. So it's really, really devastating.
Yeah. And it's definitely the beginning of this storyline of Bailey, like working through this and overcoming her OCD.
Yeah, which I was doing some reading, and it's not until season 10, like midway through, that she's like officially diagnosed with OCD and gets treated. Yeah, that's why I was like, oh, we could talk about that. But it's a while until that happens. She sees that doctor whose name is Dr. Alma.
Okay.
And there's a lot that has to happen before then. So, and I think that's like when her and Richard end up better, because he ends up saying to her like, because she doesn't want to take medication and she doesn't like want to be treated. Mm-hmm. But Richard ends up saying like, I had to be treated for my alcoholism. Like it's not something I could do on my own. Mm-hmm. And so I wonder if that's when they sort of make up again. Well, maybe also after Richard gets electrocuted.
That could be too.
But yeah, so that's where we're at with that.
Yeah. So that was a pretty big storyline throughout the two episodes. Which one do you want to go to next?
Want to do the next big one, which is Owen and Ethan, I feel like?
Sure.
Okay. So, man, Ethan is getting some time on this show. This is like his fourth episode or something. Fourth. He's been in it a lot. He's been in it in the last three of our episodes, I feel like.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, so, they should add him as a main character at this point.
So, Paul, his dad, is not awake yet. And the mom is doing better, but she's in a wheelchair and like they're monitoring her. He's able to talk to her.
Mm-hmm. Grandma's not doing well.
No, grandma's mourning. That's her son, is the dad, mm-hmm. who isn't waking up yet. And they're all trying to stay positive about it. Grandma is like, he's dying. She's having a meltdown. There's also this weird moment right in the beginning. I don't know what Ethan is doing, but I wrote down that Owen is looking at him like a proud son.
Yeah, there's like, a lot like, of that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's, yeah, for sure. There's a lot of moments. There's a lot of things with Owen in this. There's also, we'll talk about about Christina being there for Meredith's birth, but when she's talking to Owen about it, Owen says, watching a baby being born is like seeing God in person. Mm-hmm. Which like, there's just a lot of foreshadowing to Owen's feeling around children.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to say shout out to Ethan. What a shitty situation.
Yeah.
So devastating. You want to talk about the mom?
Yeah. Well, so then like, well, I think it was last episode that the mom woke up. And so continuing into this, the first episode this week, she is like, let's go see your dad. Cause she still hasn't seen her husband yet. And then, so we think like Dr. Shepherd or Derek had told Ethan, like your mom's going to be okay. And then she ends up hemorrhaging, right?
Yes. And like while they're having lunch.
Yeah. And so they rush her away and rush her up to surgery. And Owen runs up the stairs. I think by the time the elevator opens, they didn't even make it to the OR with her. Like she passed away in the elevator.
It's in the same scene when all of Bailey's patients are dying. Like it's like back and forth.
I said lots of people are dying right now.
Yeah, it's really rough. And then after that, when Owen is telling Ethan what happened, there's another sad scene. The little boy, there's like in the other room is Derek and the grandma. And he says, I need to go down to my grandma. She needs someone to hold her hand.
Yeah.
Which is just, it's very sad when children have to like push their feelings to like, so, I don't know. It's just when they can't just be kids and feel and be sad because there's no one there to like hold his emotions for him.
Yeah.
It's really sad.
Which I do think like Owen is kind of trying to do.
Yeah, for sure.
But that's complicated, clearly.
Absolutely.
So then at one point, Owen is playing ball with Ethan. Is that after his mom dies?
I don't know. I don't remember. Where he's just keep going with it.
Okay. Is it like he's outside and he's playing ball and then his grandma's like, I think it is because this is his grandma comes out and is like, we need to go back to the hotel for a little bit. Like I need to take a nap. And Ethan tells Owen that he wants to stay with him. And Owen's like, no, I think it's a good idea. You can watch TV, have a snack, you know, and you can come back. And when he comes back, he arrives on a gurney because Ethan got into his grandma's sleeping pills.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. Yes. I have a few things before that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Fast. No. You're good. I just wanted to make note that when Christina and Karev are talking, which we'll talk about when we talk about the Joe thing, Christina says to Karev, I think I'm losing Owen, not today, but soon.
Yeah.
Like, she's already aware of this. And also, it's interesting, before they go to, maybe this is in that same scene, Owen tells the grandma that she needs to talk to Ethan about his dad, like that he might not ever wake up. Because the kid is just like, oh, did my dad wake up yet?
Right.
Like, he's not aware that it probably won't happen. And the grandma pushes that responsibility onto Owen. She's like, no, you need to. And I think it's just like this fine line where like Owen, even not by choice, is having to step in and become more of a figure to this boy.
Mm-hmm.
But
which
yeah.
I so don't then, think it is Owen's responsibility. I think it's the grandmother's.
Oh, totally. Yeah, it's not Owen's.
Yeah.
Like it's Derek's responsibility to tell the grandma, who then, you know what I mean, should communicate that with her grandson.
Right, right.
And so, or a social worker should be involved. You know what I mean? Or like
absolutely.
Some, like a therapist. Like there's other people other than Owen who's not even on their case. Like he's not even the surgeon
right.
operating on either of his parents.
I was a little frustrated. Do you mind if we go back to Ethan, like taking his grandma's sleeping
pills? No. Yeah, I'm ready to do that now.
I'm ready to do that. I am here. I was a little frustrated, and I understand Owen's like worked up, but why is he yelling at the grandma? Like, it's not the grandma's fault. Like, maybe she shouldn't have put the sleeping, I don't know, maybe she should have been a little more careful, but yelling at the grandma is not going to help the situation right now.
No. Also, you know, it's again, the grandma, I'm sure, was not like, I can't wait for my grandson to take these sleeping pills. Like, that's never her intention.
Right.
I did appreciate that when they're wheeling him in, Owen tries to join and mm-hmm. Arizona says, you are too close to this.
Absolutely.
And then when Owen is yelling at the grandma about how they're going to call social services, there's a scene with Arizona next. And before he's about to say like to her, don't call yet. Like, let's just, you know, and Arizona jumps in and just says, I've already called, which
yeah.
I think is a great thing that happened. Because if Owen had been in charge, I don't know that they would have called them right away.
Yeah. There's a lot of blurred lines here.
Totally. There's that weird scene then where Christina gets this idea from the sleeping medication that maybe they can give them to Paul, the dad.
Right.
And it will reverse the coma. And there's like this hopeful music. And I got really hopeful.
And then it didn't work.
No, it's so sad. Also, they're playing Sleeping at Last, which
yeah.
is like, to me, like such a classic Grays musician or artist.
Mm-hmm.
I almost took a photo of my arm.
The actual GDPs.
Because I think I thought he was going to wake up. I had this weird narrative where like the kid doesn't wake up, but the dad does. Like
oh.
it was just like, but then none
it's
of
like reversed.
Happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing I don't write these shows.
I do think like we can then maybe talk about in regards, since we're talking about Owen and Ethan, maybe a little bit about Owen and Christina.
Yeah,
because
let's do it.
Later on, well, you had talked about what Owen had or Christina had said to Alex. Owen also, like Christina is talking to Owen when he says watching a baby be born is like seeing God in person. He also tells Christina that she has to be in there at the birth, mm-hmm. which I think is really interesting. And then there, after all of this happens, she ends up asking, well, at one point she says, like, we need to go home, like, let's make dinner. And he says, no, he wants to stay. And he thinks he needs to be there for Ethan. And then later on, she ends up asking him if he's angry with her, which he says, no.
Yeah. Which is like, I've done that. Like when you know that there's something going on with your significant other, but you don't want to like call it out, but you can, I feel like sometimes it's easy to bring it up by going like, are you mad at me?
Yeah.
And then they're like, no, I'm just going through this. You know, like I have used that tactic before.
Right.
And I feel like that's what she's trying to do there.
Like talk to me about what's going on because like,
yes.
you're clearly not communicating with me. And she ends up saying to him that he's changed later on in the
yes.
on-call room. And she...
Yep, and...
Go ahead.
No, and I just liked that Christina even, like, goes in and talks to Ethan about his dad because she knows it's too hard for Owen to do.
Mm-hmm.
There's that scene, and he, like, looks at her in this, like, understanding way. But yeah, she says... So then there's the scene... well, before the scene of them together in the on-call room, just to clean this out, the social worker... said that she wouldn't take Ethan into custody. And then now the grandma is saying that they think that they should.
Right.
The grandma says that boy needs his mother, a mother or a father. He needs a home and a place to run and a school. And then she goes into like, I can't even drive anymore. Mm-hmm. We learned that grandpa is in like a facility. Mm-hmm. And I stopped writing down things after that.
But, yeah, she has cataracts. She takes the bus. She can't can't be the caregiver for Ethan that she thinks he deserves.
Yep. And then Christina and Owen are in the on-call room and she says, you've changed. You want a kid, don't you? And he says, I want you. And it kind of ends there.
Does Owen end up taking Ethan in?
I don't know. That's what I'm like waiting for.
I can't remember. Part of me feels like he does, but I really can't remember. And you know what's interesting? Owen says, Christina, like you said, says you want a kid. And Owen says I want you. He wants Christina. And my note after that was like, but you do want a kid and that's okay. Like it's okay that Owen wants a kid, but him continuing to deny that of himself and what he really wants is ultimately going to tear him and Christina apart again.
Right. And also that's not answering her question. It's like deflecting it kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah. So things are, the season finale is the next episode. So things are happening.
Yeah.
Okay.
Next one?
I picked those two. Now you pick.
Okay. Let's go a little smaller. Let's talk about April and Matthew and Jackson and Stephanie.
Perfect. So we learn because April tells Jackson that Matthew dumped her because she lied about her virginity because he told her to. And then she blames Jackson and says that he took her virginity from her, which is absurd.
She's very mad at Jackson. Yeah.
Yeah. She's just mad at everything. And like he is the person which she dumps everything on.
Yeah. She's definitely taking it out on him.
For sure. I'm appreciative that Jackson just immediately, we don't really see anything again with them and until this other scene when Jackson says that he didn't force her to do anything. And he says, as far as us sleeping together, I'm never going to be sorry about that. With these like dreamy Jackson eyes, he's like looking into her soul. And then Matthew shows up like right behind him.
And Matthew apologizes.
He does. And he says he's sorry. And she says she's sorry. And then they hug and they kiss. And Jackson like smirks and walks away.
Yeah. And then later on, I do love that like Jackson ends up helping April in a surgery with these like three girls who were this one. They were,
oh my God,
this is terrifying.
Taking
a shot of like liquid nitrogen or something and burned her stomach, that blood coming out of her mouth. Holy shit.
Yeah, that was horrifying.
But Jackson ends up, or Kepner wants Bailey to come in, but Bailey's not doing surgery. And Jackson's like, I'll stay or whatever. And I love that April like kind of apologizes to him. And she says, you know, I'm crazy. And Jackson says, I know you are, which is like, I don't know. It's just very sweet of like, instead of him being like, no, you're not. Like, I know you are. And they kind of like forgive each other for her freaking out in the last episode or whatever.
Yeah, I love that too. Cause I'm constantly saying to Jake, why are you with me? And he's like, I don't know. Sometimes we like, that's like we joke when I like am just absurd about things. Like that's, yeah. It makes me laugh. Cause he's not like, you're not crazy. This isn't nuts. He's just like, I don't know, but I am.
Yeah. So let's just move past it.
Yeah. Which I love that. So in the second episode too, we know right away that Stephanie approaches Jackson and she doesn't even get to say anything. Like she just like comes up to him and he realizes that he forgot that they had a dinner date. He calls it a dinner and a sex date the night before. And then he remembered just now and he'll make it up to her tonight. He'll remember tonight. And then she like, he walks away and she like didn't even get to get a word in. So we don't even know like what she was going to say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I assume maybe she was going to say what she says
at the bar, which go ahead.
Oh, probably. You're right. So then at the end of the episode, he leaves the hospital with Alex, not even like looking for her. And she's at the bar, right? She's mm-hmm. just like sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And he like realizes he missed it again. And she says, it's because you're head of the hospital now. That's why you haven't called me in 11 days. And she says something like she hates how she knows how long it's been. And she doesn't want to be a needy, boring, boy obsessed girl, but she is. And she knows. And do you think her saying like, it's because you're head of the hospital now, is like her being like, please let it be that reason and not Like that you are forgetting about me and there's someone else.
I think maybe, but then when he says that, she's still not happy with it, which I kind of love. And he's like, well, you gave me an out, you know? And she's like, I love that she says I deserve to be treated better, which I think she does, yeah. You know?
I think so too. I really love Stephanie and I like that she like can admit that she's this boy crazy, boy obsessed with him, you know, person, but also like she knows she deserves better. Like I like that about her a lot.
Honestly,
it's shitty what happens to her.
I know. Like I one of my notes is during this rewatch, I'm really liking Stephanie. Like not that I ever disliked her, but I just like I'm paying more attention to her or something and her storyline. Yeah. And I don't know. I also think like I think she does deserve better, but I do for some reason it's sweet when like she drops her bag and Jackson kisses her and I don't know. I was just like, I don't know. I never used to think that they were sweet together. But in that scene, I do. I don't get it. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe I just like want to be kissed that way or I don't
know. That's probably it. Yeah. It's hard though, because like why he's been, yeah, he's the head of hospital, but also he's been really sort of involved with April. Lately,
right.
Like helping her with her problems. And then he was in that surgery with her and like,
and
it's,
yeah,
it's confusing.
It kind of sucks. Like at the end there, like April asked Jackson to go get a drink. She's like, why do I feel like getting a drink? And she so quickly is like, do you want to grab a drink? And he's like, no. And
yeah.
And I was like, that's really hard because April kind of is like, oh, you're like, I shouldn't either. Like maybe some other time. And he's like, yeah, some other time. But you know, he's saying no, because he needs to go be with Steph.
Right.
And
right.
It's like he's being pulled in two different directions and it's not great. We know how it ends. It's not great.
Yeah, we sure do. Swear to God, if anyone did that to, what if someone at my wedding stood up and stole Jake?
I thought someone stole you.
No, I mean, that'd be fine.
What if I stood up and stole Jake?
Oh, I thought you were going to say stole me.
What if, or you? What if, would we still have this podcast?
Oh my God, if you stood up and you professed your love for me and stole me, I'd probably go with you.
Be like, peace out, Jake. Love you so much. But this is a different
actually,
life.
No, what if you stole Jake and myself and we all four lived together happily?
Oh, that's what should have happened, honestly.
Yeah, so. Okay, let's talk about Arizona and Dr. Is it Boswell? Yeah, it's Boswell. I don't know her first name. I need to like look that up.
Weirdly, this doesn't even matter. But growing up, my parents used to play Adventures in Odyssey for us. And okay. My favorite episode was an episode, of course, about a cat. And the cat's name was Boswell. And my siblings hated it. But I would make us listen to it all the time. So when I heard Boswell, I thought about that episode.
Wow, that's perfect.
Yeah.
She is there because they have a patient, a baby whose brain is growing outside of its head, which my first note is Dr. Boswell, she's beautiful. Whoa, brain on the outside. Yikes. Like I just wasn't expecting to see that image. It was very shocking.
Of the baby?
The baby.
Yeah, I know. I felt so bad for that baby.
It looked like it was a major headache.
Oh, see, oh. Ow. Yeah, I know. Oh. I was just like, ah. I was too, because yeah. I was looking down typing and I looked up and that was the image on the screen and I kind of didn't know what was going on. So, yeah.
Yeah, so she's there to work on that operation. And I said, Arizona is turned on by the brain outside of the body as well as the doctor operating. Like when she's describing the surgery, I feel like she's literally simultaneously into like how well she's talking about this amazing miracle she's going to perform on this tiny baby, uh-huh. as well as like the person that's saying it.
Did we talk about the coffee cart already?
Oh no, I missed that.
I think we should just bring that up that like before Arizona meets Dr. Boswell, shoot, what was her first name? Lauren. They're at the coffee cart and Arizona takes the coffee that says Lauren on it and it's like dumping sugar in it. And then Lauren is like, that's my coffee. And they kind of like flirt there. And then when they meet each other, it's like, oh, she's the girl from the coffee cart.
Gotcha. Okay. I missed that part.
Okay. And so, yeah, it's very clear that they're flirting with each other.
Yeah. And then Callie sees them in the room and she comes in and I love how she's like also excited like a little kid about the surgery. Mm-hmm. And she says in jest after they describe it, she like turns to Arizona and she says, I'm a little in love with her.
Right.
And like I feel like the way that Callie is saying it is definitely like a joke. Mm-hmm. And but the way Arizona is looking at her, which props to Jessica Capshaw's acting with her eyeballs.
Like her eyeballs.
They, like true, like both of those doctors don't really flirt openly until the elevator scene, but there is some flirting with the eyeballs, you know? Mm-hmm. You just the way they do like a look up and down a few times. Like it's
steamy.
Great. It's super steamy. And then, like, literally, they have two, like, really two scenes together, three, because then at the end, they're in the elevator together, and Dr. Boswell is behind her, behind Arizona, and she kind of just says that she's so happy she ran into her. She starts talking about how beautiful her eyes are. Are they blue? They're definitely blue. And Arizona just says, I'm married. I'm happily married. You met her earlier today. And she's like, ortho, beautiful eyes, beautiful, beautiful eyes, like, starts describing her. And I thought it was really bold. The Dr. Boswell does not back down.
No.
Like she basically says like, it wasn't by chance that I, like, you're the only Arizona Robbins. Like I came here to see you.
Right.
Sort of.
You like, you think I don't know this? Like I looked you up online.
Yeah. It's crazy. It kind of reminds me of the way Arizona flirted with Callie in the beginning, mm-hmm. you know, like just super like confident and like not backing down at all. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I smell trouble.
So do I. So.
Because even when she walks away, Arizona kind of smiles.
Yep. Arizona also says, I have one leg.
Yes. Like as if that's like a reason not to be interested in her.
Right. But I think that's important because that's something that Arizona is still struggling with. And yeah, her response is like, you don't think I know all of that, you know?
Right.
So.
Yeah. Woo. Steamy.
Yeah. Next one, Alex.
Yep.
Okay. So Joe moving in with Chess Peckwell. I was like, whoa, that feels soon.
I learned his real name is Jason Wellers. I finally learned it after all of these episodes.
Yeah. But doesn't it seem kind of early?
Yeah. Krev calls her an idiot too, which is a little too
not great.
Honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're moving in early. Obviously, it's going well-ish, or so we think. I don't know, but it's happening. And I must have missed the part where Alex says something to Jason, but obviously he did. Did you catch when he says it?
I don't remember. I mean, I don't remember exactly where it was in the episode, but I do know that he was just trying to, like, be like, hey, I'm just looking out for Joe because, you know, she was in foster care. And as a kid who was also in foster care, like, we look out for each other. I just want to make sure she's, like, doing the right thing and you're going to take care of her. And I think it was kind of like a peace offering.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, but then Peckwell kind of took it, like, didn't know any of that.
Right. And so then—
But he didn't, he also didn't give that off to Karev. He wasn't like, I didn't know that. He was like, oh, cool, man. All right. Like, thanks. But you could tell, like, kind of the way he was looking at him, like, he didn't know any of it.
Exactly. And so Karev then is approached by Joe, who basically is like, how dare you? Which I agree with this. Like, how that's my story to tell. How dare you tell it without my knowledge or with my approval. Kind of reminds me in the Brené Brown book that you just finished reading and I'm reading, where she talks about like, what's the word she uses? Like there's your vault of things to share and like some things are not yours to share.
Yeah.
And I feel like Karev crossed a line there.
Yeah, defense of Karev, I don't think he should have shared. But like, I think he thought that Joe had told him all of that.
Well, yeah, if you're moving in with someone, you'd think that they would know your past, which is, I agree. I think that's what he was thinking.
Yeah.
Which to me, it shows again that like this decision to move in together might be too soon.
Yeah. But I agree. Like it's not Krab. It's not his place to talk about Krab's, or I'm sorry, Joe's past.
Well, they're both Krabs at some point.
Yes, this is confusing. True. This is very true.
So then the first episode ends with Christine, because Christina lives in Mara's old house with Karev. I guess it's Karev's house now. And he like shows up in the doorway and he just says, you were right about Joe. And Christina like looks at him, puts her book down and like pats the bed. And he like looks, I love his acting in this. He's like very confused. And she just goes, try it. And then he goes and lays there and then he opens up again. He's like, I'm such an idiot. I love her. And then I love how he's like looking at Christina when he lays down, like, what are you doing? Like, why am I laying here? And then he says, you're weird. And she goes, give it a minute. And then like 3 seconds later, he says that I'm always screwing myself out of everything good. Mm-hmm. And they like pause. And she says that I think I'm losing Owen thing. So it's like laying in bed together equals opening up and being vulnerable. And like, she's not going to be mean to him when he's laying right there.
Yeah. Kind of. And also it's like, he kind of took on the role of Meredith there.
Yep.
You know?
It was really cute.
Yeah.
He admits he loves her, though. That's huge.
Yeah. He also then shows up to the hospital listening to heavy metal.
Yeah, with a hoodie on. And she opens his little dingle dongle, puts it in her ear and goes, what is that? The soundtrack of your broken heart? And then when Joe shows up at the end of the elevator, Christina's like, not today. Don't take this one. And shuts the elevator door in her face.
When she said, no, Joe shows up and she says, out of order, hairball, take the stairs.
Oh, that's her words. Yeah, it's great. It's so good.
So she's clearly there for Krev.
Yes. Even though he's evil Spawn.
Yeah. So then Alex ends up, so they're like, keep running into each other. He tries to avoid her all day and then just keeps running into her. And then she's in the surgery he's in. And then he's on doing like research on a computer and she shows up and she's like, can't we just like kind of make amends? And he like freaks out on her and calls her a crazy.
Well, yeah, she,
go ahead.
Well, no, he says, I'm sorry your boyfriend is an idiot and he can't deal with your past. And then he says, I'm sick of crazy chicks with problems, which is so stupid because he also, it's not how he feels about her. And like, he's just not good at like at being vulnerable.
No, he's not. And saying how he really feels.
Right. Because all he would have to do is open up there. Yeah. And exactly. But instead he like calls her crazy and like just wants to like get out of the situation, which is just sad. Because I think if he just opened up, it would have been better. Obviously, that's the theme of this entire show.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
So then Alex, which also that scene was funny. They're both typing on computers and they're typing very angrily. Yeah. It's like very hard typing. And then Alex and Jackson leave the hospital together and the last thing they see is Joe and Jason fighting.
Right.
In just like verbally, it appears. Mm-hmm. But they're definitely angry.
Yes.
And he walks out.
Right. And then the end of the episode, Joe is sitting on the swing at Krev's house at this point. And Krev kind of like gets at her again, you know? I don't know if you have exactly what he says to her there.
No, he's just like, I'm trying to give you space. You're here. What more can I do? And then she turns.
Yeah, and she turns and like into the light and you can tell that she has like a black eye. Beginnings of a black eye.
Yeah.
She's
Jumanji drums are playing.
Yeah, she's clearly been hit in the face and she asks if she can stay the night, stay there tonight.
Yep.
So, and then it ends.
Yeah. I did not remember this.
Oh, you didn't? I didn't remember it until I saw them arguing. I was like, I know something happens. I can't remember what. And then I was like, oh, fuck, this happens.
I didn't know that I was like that he's a bad egg.
Yeah.
I mean, I know he is, but I'm trying to find his character. Oh, Dr. Jason Myers. I just wanted to look up. Like what happens? Chest Peckwell. It says alias. Chest Peckwell. Super douche and ass face.
I love.
I'm going to guess.
You're going to guess what?
That all of those nicknames except Chest Peckwell are all from Alex.
I love that at one point, like Christina calls him Peckwell and he tries to correct her and she said, nobody cares.
Yeah. Also, wait. So Alex, does he end up beating him up?
I don't remember. Maybe he punches him. I know he gets really mad.
Yeah. Alex takes him to the. Yeah. Wait, is Alex a jail? I gotta look. But I'm curious because that means Alex beat up like multiple people.
Yeah. Well, he got in a fight with George in like the first season.
I guess I know. So,
toxic masculinity. Anyways.
Oh, wait, no. So, can I spoiler for next episode?
Sure.
Or do you want to not be spoiled?
No, I'll be spoiled.
I think Joe hit him until he fell back and hit his head. So Alex has to take him to the hospital. So Alex doesn't hit him. Joe did. And that's how she got away.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So anyways, moving on. Okay. So that's just really sad. And I, again, just like, it's really, Joe's storyline always hits me and like really just makes me, it's crazy that like, is this her first season? I think it is. Mm-hmm. And like that's already a constant, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay. The last thing I want to talk about is light and happy. And it is Derek and Meredith having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
Meredith thinks that Derek is going to pump her full of drugs. She has chosen to have the birth naturally. So she wants Christina there to support her and talk to the nurses. But Christina does not want to see Meredith's poop on the table.
Yes. And I love the exchange between Krev, Christina, and Meredith about that whole thing. And like...
Yeah. Krev's like, you're going to shit on the table.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting. I'm not saying like that doctors don't go this way. I just think it's interesting that Meredith's character wants to have a natural birth.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I also am like, wait, Christina, you've seen births. Like when Owen says the statement about what seeing a baby born is, I'm like, she's had to have seen it.
Yeah, like rotations and like, you know.
Yeah. But I do love when she finally comes around and she says, I'll be there in the room when the fetus arrives. You're going to poop on the table and I'm going to see it and never unsee it.
Yeah.
And then Meredith goes like, I think it's going to be worse to be me, the one who knows that you are seeing me poop on the table. Yeah. Like, it's just such a funny conversation.
Also, you don't always poop on the table.
No, maybe you poop beforehand.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know.
I also, okay, this is like pointless, but I just need to make a note of this because I feel like we shit on Derek a lot. Mm-hmm. This is just purely, I am talking about him as super hot. This is like, I noticed he got kind of gray in this episode. Like, yeah. I don't know if maybe they didn't color it like they had been in the past or like he just turned gray. That was my first note. And then in the end scene, when he is wearing that tight thermal shirt with the three buttons and he's got the crown on and they're having that cute conversation and he says about Zola, he says, oh my God, she's so perfect. And they're talking about the sun. And he goes, what if he's a monster? What if he steals her toys? Like, I just thought, I wrote Derek looks hot. And then I go, I'm going to vote. This is the hottest moment of his. Like, just looks wise. I'm really into this moment.
Yeah, I think it's in response to his patient that he had in like the little brother who was like terrorizing his sister. And I love that that they put a vampire in her head. I was like, oh, that poor little brother.
I know he's going to be scarred forever.
Seriously. But yeah, it's definitely in response to that. But I do think it's so cute how he's like, she is perfect. Because I feel like that's such like a dad thing to feel about their children. You know, he or she is perfect. So
yeah, like they're just looking at him playing or at her playing and they just like, he just can't get over it.
Yeah.
Like he just has to say it out loud. It's just so cute. And then when Mare's like, you're wearing a princess crown. Like she got you to do that. Like she will be fine.
Yeah. She has you like wrapped around her finger. Like she's going to be fine. You know,
he just looks really nice in that shirt. Yeah. I think I like him in his outdoorsy uniform, you know?
Yeah. I thought
get Derek Shepherd out of the scrubs, get him in some thermal wear, put him in an Eddie Bauer catalog.
Eddie Bauer, man. Yeah. He looks real good in some Eddie Bauer gear.
Sponsor this man. God. So anyways, that's really just, I was happy that it ended on that note.
Yeah. I have a couple random notes.
Go for it.
I said, this is why you don't do a tug of war. And I said, God, yeah. I always hated that. I always hated on like field day when you'd have to do tug of war and you'd like get dragged through the mud and be like, oh, our team lost. Like, fuck tug of wars.
There's those two colleges, Cope and Kelvin, here in West Michigan that do like, it's called the pull and it's like a legendary, like they like train for it for like all year long. And then they have this, it's very intense.
No,
and
thank
like people
you.
Like get injured. Yeah, I'm not here for it. Also with a clothesline. Okay. I just want to say though, I feel really bad for Al. He's like the leader of the family reunion. He's like trying to pass out food and someone yells, nobody is hungry or thirsty or wants to run a relay race. And I said, poor Al, just trying to brighten spirits.
I know. And then that dude punched him in the face.
I know. And he's not married and he's just like, this is all he has.
I know. He's just doing the best he could.
And I have a random note too about when Christina's with Amelie, the pregnant woman who's giving birth, and she has that moment where she tells her to breathe with her and like gets her to like move forward with the C-section. And then watching her perform surgery on that little baby was super intense. And It was just cool to watch.
Yeah. She's a badass.
She sure is. And she knows it. She says something like, wow, I'm good.
Yeah. the one other thing with those girls who were intoxicated and they were talking to Avery and they said, my breasts are sick. I was like, oh my God, that is.
Yeah. That was gross.
So fucking forward. Yeah.
I wondered if I was like that at my 21st birthday. I know I wasn't.
Abby, of course you were not.
I cleaned up someone else's puke on my 21st birthday.
Of course you did. That doesn't surprise me at all.
And at my bachelorette party, my friend made me drink a bottle of water between all my drinks, so I never even got hungover.
Oh, that's a really good friend.
I just got really full.
That's a good friend.
It was a lot of liquid.
Yeah, that is.
So, we're going to save the magician talk for our post-op.
We are.
Also, just had a note, Christina speaks French. I mean, obviously, because I think of she's from Canada.
Yeah.
Not obviously. I learned she speaks four languages, actually.
Which is insane!
But like her speaking French on the phone means her character, Christina, speaks French.
Yes.
Which was just an interesting fact. So, okay. Should we do notes and trivia?
Yes.
Okay. This episode's title originated from the song Sleeping Monster, originally sung by Mastodon. This episode scored, I don't know why I paused. This episode scored 8.24 million viewers, and it is the 100th episode in which Jessica Capshaw actually appears as Arizona Robbins.
Second episode's title originated from the song Do You Believe in Magic, originally sung by The Lovin' Spoonful. This episode scored 8.87 million viewers. Although there are stills from the episode of Callie in Arizona in their bedroom, the scene wasn't in the episode itself. And this episode takes place on May 1st, 2013, as seen on Bailey's agar plates?
It must be the little, like, testing things.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Catherine Fox.
At first, I said no one because I couldn't think of someone. I ended up going with Christina because she let Alex be vulnerable in the bedroom. That sounds sexual. She literally sat on the bed and she helped Owen talk to Ethan and then she agreed to watch Mare poop on a table.
I think that's a really good one. I would probably agree with that more than mine. My other one I said maybe Richard for calling Ben to be with Bailey and then taking all of her patients.
I thought about giving it to Ben for like dropping everything and coming
but he
to help his
really
wife.
Really there.
Right. It was only like in one episode. So,
it's hard. I would say Christina's good. She has more reasons than Richard. So,
okay, great. I rated it 7.5. I had GGBs a few times. I do like these towards the finale episodes. I feel like they're building to something, but it wasn't like the greatest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah. I gave it a 7 out of 10. I like the storylines. But I feel like these are more setting us up for like the season finale, the final two episodes. So,
Okay, so we'll call time of death, but remember if you are listening on Patreon and you are attending that we have the post-op episode coming up for you. And if you want to become one, you still can, and you can get this episode in all the backlog of all the other ones.
Yes.
So all right. I will call time of death this time.
Okay.
Death.
Time of death.
Time of death is 15:45.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.